my name is Jason, and I am an alcoholic. And it's really nice to be talking here in Sunday Nighters. Sunday Nighters is the first place I ever gave my story. And one of the things that I can tell you is that if you're a newcomer, don't ever wear a tie to a meeting, because I happened to come in. I was a newcomer to Montreal. I had a tie on, you know. I wanted to look good. And they picked me out to speak. So that's happened twice in Montreal, so I never wear a tie to a meeting again. But Sean caught me, even without a tie, so here I am. I'm not a really excellent speaker. I have a story just like you do. And I usually have two types of, go about it two ways. Sometimes I make long notes, you know, and then I'm really busy reading my notes during the meeting. Sometimes I go just off the top of my head, and that can also be a disaster. Today I sort of blended the two, so I have some notes, and I'll try to go mostly from memory. I come from a family that had alcoholism on both sides of the family. My father was an alcoholic. His father was an alcoholic. That's as far back as I know on that family. On my mother's side, my mother was a codependent. My grandmother was a codependent. My grandfather was an alcoholic. My great-grandmother and grandfather were not alcoholics, but I do believe they were codependents. My great-great-grandmother, which would be back in the 1860s, got a divorce, and women at that time did not get a divorce, so there's some dysfunction there that wasn't talked about. And I think it probably was alcoholism, because that side of the family is very codependent. So essentially, I learned codependency at my mother's knee. I grew up to become an alcoholic. And also to that, I added drug addiction. And that's the total of my story. But today I'm going to stick mostly with alcoholism. But I just want you to know that those are also part of my personality. One of the things that from my very earliest beginnings I felt was the sense of being alone, of being separate from everyone. My father was a lifer in the Army. I had four sisters, a mother, a grandmother, and a great-grandmother, and we all lived in a couple of houses right together. So here I was, the only boy. So I had this sense that even though I was surrounded by people, I felt different, and I felt separate. Adding to that, when I got into high school, I started noticing I really wasn't attracted to girls. I was more attracted to people of my own sex. So I come from a little town called Jasper, Texas, which is in Deep East Texas. And it's a pretty prejudiced area. They don't like blacks, Hispanics, Jews, or gay people. So when I sort of figured out toward the end of my high school, or middle, that I might be gay, that separated me even more from the people there. So I really sort of narrowed down to being alone. I went off to college like most people in my generation. You either went off to college or to Vietnam, and I chose college. And there I met alcohol. Prior to that, my family on my mother's side were very religious and a fundamentalist religion, and alcohol was just not part of the story. So I didn't think I really had a problem. You know, why would I have a problem with alcohol? To me, all the alcoholics were removed from my life, so I had no concept that I might be an alcoholic, but I might have this problem. So here I am in college, feeling separated, alone, studying pretty hard because I still didn't want to go to Vietnam, and started what I think a lot of people do, is using alcohol as a social lubricant. It enabled me to talk to people more freely and enabled me to you know, just meet people and to go to places where they were drinking and dance a little better. Or at least I thought I danced a little better. I don't know whether I actually did or not. I probably just my thinking. So alcohol became my friend when I was alone, when I was depressed, when I was often hungry. I would turn to alcohol, and those things would help me. And I went on drinking till for about 16 years. At the end of that time, I was a mess. I would get drunk, you know, and I'd go to bed at night and I'd wake up with a bed and wonder what happened. I would end up in people's houses where I didn't know where I was. I would fall down. I've broken so many pairs of glasses by falling down and either losing them or breaking them. And at the end of this time, still during all of that, I just couldn't come to the belief that I was an alcoholic. Yet at my very first job, one of the trainings that I went to, there was this professor there, and so I had a lot of respect for him, and he was talking about alcoholism, and he said, well, he was a functional alcoholic. Well, I'd only been drinking for about 3 or 4 years, so I had a denial about the fact that I was an alcoholic. Well, I realize now is he also had a denial about his own alcoholism, because there's no such thing as a functional alcoholic. But I latched on to that. And after drinking for 3 years, I'm a functional alcoholic, you know. This works well. I can function. I can drink. Go on about my business. Well, it just didn't work that way. I started losing friends. I really never lost a job at drinking, because I would always feel so guilty the next day. I would come back and work a lot harder. I have lost some jobs in sobriety. But at the end of this time, I was having problems with my health. I would go out drinking at night, and back then, blue jeans were real tight. It was the style, and I had the body to get into tight jeans. And so I put my money in my pants pockets, you know, and I reached down in my pants pockets to get some money for some beer, you know, come out, and like big parts of my skin would flake off in my hands, you know. And so instead of sort of figuring out that maybe drinking was having an adverse effect on my health, I figured out that if I put the money in my shirt pocket, I could reach in and get my beer without injuring my hands. So that went on for a while. I went to the doctors to figure out, you know, what was wrong with my hands. And finally, after about 3 or 4, one of them asked me, well, how much do you drink? Well, I can remember saying, oh, probably about a 6-pack a day. Well, if you know anything about alcoholics, when they say 2 beers, they usually mean 2 6-packs. And I was drinking quite a bit then, drinking hard liquor, and chasing it with beer, and on the weekends doing drugs. So all of these things were affecting my body. And I knew something was wrong, you know. Something was not right in my life, but I still couldn't accept the fact that I was an alcoholic. So right about that time, a higher power started intervening in my life. Via officer such and such, who I got arrested for DWI and went 2 years with probation. Ended that probation. Within a week, I had gone out and gotten another DWI. And what I realized back then was that my subconscious was doing for me what I could not consciously do for myself. But my subconscious and my higher power. And at that point, when I got that DWI, I decided that I would stop drinking. And I was in this group at church, and they were pairing us up into prayer partners. And so there was this woman that I liked, and so I asked her to be my prayer partner. And she was about 30 years older than me, so there wasn't any of what I wanted was what she had spiritually, not what she had physically. And we became prayer partners. And within the first couple of times we prayed, I found out that she had, at that point, 25 years of sobriety. So essentially we started praying with each other every morning, and she essentially prayed me into heaven, into AA, which for me at that point was heaven. I started learning things about myself, and that was in December of 85. And I went for 9 months going to AA meetings and not drinking. And in August, I had a slip. And it lasted a weekend. And I came back to the program, and I was really beating myself up. And this is what just 9 months of being in the program could do. After about a week of that, I realized that, well, you know, you spent 16, 17 years drinking without a sober weekend. Now you've gone 9 months sober with one drinking weekend. You know, that's progress. And so I turned that into, rather than a defeat for myself, is seeing that, yes, I've come a long way. And I've got further to go. But hopefully with a cup of job and whatever, that will happen. A couple of things that are real important to me in the program, and have always been tools for me in staying sober, are in the back of the book. There's a sentence that says the main thing to being sober, to achieving sobriety, and I'm paraphrasing this rather poorly, is willingness, openness, and honesty. And if you can get one of those three things, then you can become sober. And for me, I first really got willingness to do anything that it took to get sober. And I can remember when I went to treatment, I was dealing with some sort of emotional problem. And this was a nice treatment center out in the woods in rural Texas, and you know, there were woods all around. And so I went out into the woods to deal with my emotions, because one of the things that I'd always learned is that, you know, I was supposed to not have these emotions, and I was supposed to calm them down. And so I can't even remember what it was I was upset about, but I was upset about it. So I was there realizing, you know, what I needed to do was talk to somebody. So, and I'd made a vow to myself that I was willing to do anything to deal with this. So I come back from the woods, coming around to where the dormitories are, and I made a vow. I said, you know, I'll talk to the first person I see about this problem. And here was this real person that I thought was a jerk. I thought, well, God, you know, maybe I really meant the second person that I see. I didn't want to talk to him. But then my mind said, no, you see the first person. So I went and I talked with him about this problem. And, you know, he told me exactly what I needed to hear. He gave me such a sense of relief and was able to relate to what I was saying. So I realized that was just a blessing there. Openness. I have a real fear of intimacy with other people. And I'm talking about on an emotional, not on a sexual level, but on an emotional friend-to-friend level. And I still deal with this from time to time, but, you know, some of the things that have helped me get over this is doing a fifth step, doing a fourth step, opening up to another person, opening up to alcoholics at meetings, and I'm certainly more open now than I was then. So my openness has become more and more open. as my sobriety program goes along. Honesty. Honesty is another thing that has changed for me. And part of that was just my ability to see who I was when I first got sober. You know, I had so many blinders on. You know, I always had the idea that, you know, somebody, God, is going to come around with, like, Tinkerbell, with this fairy dust, and sprinkle it over y'all, and y'all will realize just how nice I am. And that never happened. I became more honest with myself when the dust got sprinkled on me. And that's something that happens more each year. I'm more able to do that. I have deeper insights about myself. I can see where things have come from. One of the things that has changed for me in sobriety has been my belief in a higher power. When I first came into AA, I had a fairly traditional belief in a higher power. And I can remember being in a meeting, and this shows you sort of where I was mentally at the time. I think I was in the first 3 or 4 months of sobriety. And this woman there, and she was talking about, there was this clubhouse, and it was on the, you know, just a small building, and there were trees around. And she said that she had a problem with higher power, and that tree out there was her higher power, and she just prayed to that tree. And I remember thinking, well, you know, I can go saw down your tree with a chainsaw. You'll have to remember I'm from Texas. And I thought maybe we should, you know, come up with something a little bit more powerful than a tree. But I didn't saw down the tree. And, you know, my own perceptions and beliefs and changed. And I now see that the God is in the trees and is in the air and is in everything around us. And my most spiritual moments are when I'm out in the country or out camping or watching the water. Those are just really high times for me. There's some tools that have really kept me sober. And one of those have been the slogans in AA. And when I first came into AA, they used to say them a lot. And I really hated them. I mean, they irritated the absolute peaches out of me. And I found out that when things go bad, one of those slogans would pop in my mind, and it would give me a tool on how to live or handle that situation. So I have a much more appreciative appreciation for them today than I did back then. One of the best ones for me is do the next best right thing. I don't always know the best thing to do. I don't know how it's going to end up. But I can look at my options and pick out the one that I think is the best. And I can do that. And then from whatever happens, I can look at my next group of options. Pick out whatever I think will be best and go with that. And as long as I'm doing that, I'm progressing, I'm getting better, I'm getting stronger. Another one that we had up on the wall was get a sponsor, use a sponsor. And that really helped me with my openness because I talked with my sponsor every day. My prayer partner became my sponsor. She's still one of my sponsors. She's 91 years old. She's in the nursing home, but we still talk regularly. But she has helped me through so many problems. I can remember one time I got laid off from a job, and I'd been sober for quite a bit of a while. And, you know, I called her up, and she just helped me go through those emotions and come to a sense of completion with that. Another one that really I like is if you're stuck, move. And I saw the best example of this at a meeting one time when a mother and her young son like this were in the meeting, and he decided he was going to go from that row to that row between these two chairs, and he got stuck. and he was going to go through. He had no concept of backing up, twisting, whatever. And I guess he was about a year and a half. And she said, you know, if you're stuck, move, come this way, and you know, helped him to come out of that spot. And often I felt stuck in sobriety, and certainly in alcoholism. And an example of this was I had a job at a printing company, and I was just miserable. I was absolutely miserable. And but I didn't leave. I didn't go look for job applications. I didn't do any of the things that a normal person would do to get out of a job they hated. And what happened was I got to thinking about my life, and I realized one day that what was happening was that I had been raised in a family where I felt stuck all my life, you know, and I didn't know how to get out of it as a young child. Here I was in a job that I felt stuck in, and that miserable, rotten feeling felt real comfortable. You know, it was something I was familiar with. It was much easier than the fear or insecurity of going out and doing applications and finding a better job. Once I came to that realization, within a week, I had a much better job at a much better place for a lot more money. And that's just one of the gifts of the program. Another slogan that's been real helpful for me is to think, think, think. Often I've heard it said that when you've got a big decision to make, talk it over with three different people. Talk it over with somebody. Think about it. Talk it over with somebody else. Think about it. Talk it over with somebody else. Think about it. And wait 3 days. And often what you come up with on the first day is completely different from what you come up with on the third day. First of all, your emotions have had time to sort of even out. You maybe get a better picture of it. Or you may be at the same belief and decision that you had the first day, but you've got more equanimity about it. Another one that was mentioned earlier today was principles over personalities. And this is another way that my belief system has changed in AA. When I first came in, I heard this is my principles over your personalities, because y'all were all jerks, or often acted like jerks. What I realize now is when I have a problem with somebody else, it's got to be my principles over my personality, because I'm the one acting like a jerk. And when I can stay with my principles rather than how I feel or how I'm upset or those things, deal with those emotions, yes, but don't deny them. But stay on the principles in dealing with another person, then I'm able to really use that slogan. One of my favorite ones is, what you think of me is really none of my business. Mm-hmm. And I think that explains itself. There are a couple of others that I want to just touch on, and one is dealing with feelings. Anytime you have a feeling, you have gone through a four-step process, and the process is action, thought, decision, and feeling. And you never have a feeling without having gone through those four things. And you can see it if you look at a little child that's like 1 or 2 years old, and they're walking and they fall and sit on their bottom, and they get this strange look on their face, and they sort of look at you. They twist like this, and then they start crying. And what's happened is he or she has gone through a process of, you know, this didn't feel too good. You know, what can I do about it? And makes the decision to cry and be upset. And what happens is these become so automatic for us that we're into the feelings without even realizing that we've gone through that process. Well, that process may be one that we developed in childhood that may not be useful for us now. So often when I find myself in a emotion that I think I need to deal with, and I can tell you at one time when I was in treatment, there was a person supposed to come for family week, and they didn't show up, and I was very upset about it. I went to my room and I cried. And then I started thinking, I had been given these tools, and went back from feeling abandoned and lonely and hurt that they didn't care enough about me to come to my family week, and realized that I had made a decision that they just didn't want to come. And I've also thought, in that thought process was, well, they never come through for me before that. They never come through for me. Well, they just don't care about how or whatever. And the action was that they didn't show up. So when I was able to do that, then all that anger, that sadness, that aloneness sort of melted away. I was still disappointed, but it wasn't the rage or the real hurt that I'd felt prior to that. One of the things that my sponsor gave me early on in sobriety, because I had a lot of what you might call anger, and it was this little book, and it was this color of pink, and it had written in green on it, "Why are you angry?" And just the cover made me a little irritated, but it had four questions for me to deal with, and they were, why am I angry? What am I really angry about? What am I going to do about it? And what am I really going to do about it? And often what I think I'm angry at is not what I'm really angry at. I'm angry at... And then, for me, I'm a little bit grandiose in my personality, so, you know, if you cross me and pissed off at you, well, I'm going to, you know, let out all the air on your tires and soak your car or whatever. But then the question is, what are you really going to do about it? And often when I get down to that, sort of all of that, that sort of melts away all that power I put behind the grandiose part of what I'm going to do about it. Also, when I figure out what I'm really angry at, that sort of helps me also. Sobriety is a wonderful thing for me. It has really enriched my life. It has introduced me to a lot of wonderful people, and I have really grown since I have come into the program. I don't really have a whole lot else to say, except that I hope that all of y'all have a good 24 hours. Stay sober, stay in touch with your higher power, come to meetings, call someone if you have a problem, think about decisions, and let God be your guide. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.